Good day, and welcome to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, with Reiki Master and host, Phyllis Lee Furumoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now, here's your host, Phyllis Furumoto.
Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today I have the pleasure of being with Gordon Melvin. Melvin? Yes, two first names for me, so I'm just trying to get this into my head. He's from a city north of London. Sorry, I'm a little bit stuttery today. And Gordon, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for this.
Yeah, and of course, my usual lead-in for all of my guests is to ask you how you met Reiki and, yeah, a little bit of your Reiki story. And I understand that your Reiki story sort of took a lurch at the very beginning, and you've come out in a place where you feel very connected to Reiki and what you're doing, and I appreciated your story, so... Okay. Let's have it.
Well, I was doing some therapeutic work with a therapist who had a therapy room wallpapered in all her certificates. It was wallpaper. There were so many different things she did. And she approached me when the work I was doing with her was very successful and was part of a turning point in my life. One day, somewhat into the work we were doing, she said, "I think you'd like Reiki." And I said, "Oh, yeah." And I asked her to tell me a bit about it, and she didn't say very much, but she just went on that, "I reckon you're going to like it, and you and I can work together." And eventually, being a hard sell sort of type woman, she suggested the dates of a Reiki class, first degree Reiki class, and asked me to come, and talked about it with great relish and anticipation. Personally, I thought it was a bit odd that she never offered to give me a treatment, but I went with my gut, as I do, and my gut said, follow this, this could be really exciting, because I worked in the field of healing vaguely, working in the NHS, the National Health Services, as a hospital chaplain. So anyway, we got close to the date, and the hype was up, and we went along, and I was the only guy, surprise, surprise. And very early on in the class, if you could call it that, I got a gut feeling that this just wasn't right. But how would I know? Because I didn't know very much about Reiki.
Uh-huh. So was the therapist your Reiki master, or was it somebody else?
I was going to her with a whole lot of... she's a kinesiologist.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to her with a bunch of conditions to do with food and drink and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And I got involved with some psychological work, issues that I was working through.
Uh-huh.
To do with actually changing my job and following a new path. So she wasn't a Reiki master.
Oh, okay, I'm just checking.
I mean, she wasn't. When you hear the whole story, you'll know that she wasn't. But
right.
Yeah. Anyway, day one, day two, we had been initiated with the things that you get initiated with in first degree. I'm not a master. And we spent most of the time colouring in pictures, looking at crystals and holding them, and searching for Indian guides, North American Indian guides. And there was a huge amount of tension in the group. And one by one, all the women in the group came up to me and said, "This isn't right, is it?" And I said, "No, it's not right. I don't know a lot about Reiki, but this isn't right. And there's something really, really wrong here." And they said, "I'm not happy." I said, "I'm not happy either. And I want to find out what's going on." And there began to be a bit of a tension with the Reiki master and the group. And she began to get vibes, and she could see there was some competition that people were confiding in me and not telling her about the problems. We'd had lunch, and still no treatments, second day. And she came in and she screamed at me and completely lost her rag and said, "I want you out of here, now!" And as you can imagine, I was a bit surprised, you know, Reiki, peace and light and love and all that stuff out the window. And if I'd known what I know now about Reiki, I would have stood my ground and really challenged her. But I didn't. I went into kind of shock. I couldn't believe it. I got in my car, drove 50 miles, and sat somewhere and thought, right. Luckily, I never heard from her again other than that she didn't want to see me again, and that was that. And it wasn't upset, but I got proactive and rang up a bunch of Reiki people that I knew, organizations, and asked them, is this Reiki, and is this what happens, and da-da-da-da-da, and they were all horrified. And they put me in touch with the Reiki Association. And they put me in touch with a local second degree student and said, have a chat to her. I went along to her house, a woman now in her 80s, and I had my first treatment. And it took me about 5 seconds into the treatment to think, this is what I thought Reiki was about. And I was absolutely and totally amazed by the treatment and the degree of relaxation and peace and well-being and how much it affected me and touched me.
Mm-hmm. So I'm fascinated that this is what you expected, and yet you didn't get very much information. You just heard the word Reiki, how did you conjure your expectations?
I did read a bit, and I got a book, and I asked some other people, and a friend of mine had done her first degree with this particular Reiki person, master, and I asked her a bit, but she seemed pretty vague. And I knew that it was to do with on hands, healing, touching.
Uh-huh.
And that really interested me. And I knew that it was part of a system where you didn't just touch willy-nilly. There was a system across the body touching upon the major functions of the body.
Uh-huh.
So I knew it was kind of scientific. And I also knew that it possibly related to what the Christians call on hands, healing.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of was interested in the bridge straight away.
I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Anyway, I had that treatment, and it was really a wow time. I mean, I just was so thankful. And I thought, I've gone from one extreme to the other, from a place where there was no tolerance, no love, when it was supposed to be about that, no chance to explain or talk or work through the issues with Reiki, to a place where I was just welcomed into a stranger's home, given an hour and a half treatment, and made to feel absolutely wonderful and experienced a turning point. She then suggested that I might be in touch with a local master who lives some miles away, and I acted upon that. And bit by bit, the master, organized a class, and I and my best friend went, so there's only two of us, and it was a weekend class. And it was just sublime. It really was. It was just absolutely, totally amazing. And by the end of that weekend, I felt I'd made friends with people that were second to none because of the closeness and the compassion and just the good time we had at the meals and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So
your first degree Reiki class was like a residential where you ate with each other, you ate within the class and so
it
on.
Wasn't residential in as much that I stayed there. It was a local person's home. And
uh-huh.
We went there Friday night, Saturday and Sunday, so we had an afternoon meal.
Oh, I see.
And we had a kind of a little feast, a little banquet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Great. So then, how did you start, what did you do with your first degree then? Were you still working as a hospital chaplain then?
Yeah, I was. I think I was slow. I think I have been slow on the Reiki path. It's been interesting. I mean, I had to be clear myself that I was well and truly leaving behind whatever happened in the first instance. And I kind of just got my head into a different space and let that go. And the master said, don't worry about this, put it aside. My first degree didn't touch me as much as my second.
Uh-huh.
And I know that for some people that's not so, but it touched me, but I don't think I was sufficiently aware to know what I'd really been given.
Uh-huh.
And I would still say the same thing, actually. But I was slow to treat myself as much as I would now. I did it, but I didn't see it particularly as part of my daily life. Whereas
mm-hmm.
now I would feel impoverished if I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. So how many years ago did you...
Well, that was 2001.
2001, so 6 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. So So you, how long was it between your first and second degree then?
About a year and a half, a year and three quarters, mm-hmm.
and,
2 years.
And how did you, if you don't feel like you were touched very deeply by the first degree, is that what you said?
I was touched, but I was touched more deeply and profoundly by the second degree.
Uh-huh. And, of course, well, some wise person said, reasons are what we look for after we've done something, right? So, okay. But anyway, do you have a reason for this, or
do you have several reasons?
Maybe we should use the word theory.
I think it's maturity and growing, and I'm quite a reflective person, so some of the things that happen in my life are enriched by periods of reflection. So it happens, but I need to go away and be with it.
Uh-huh.
So that was part of it. Something came to mind, but I think also another thing that was a turning point in the whole gift was when people sent me a treatment, and I was just absolutely and totally and utterly amazed that I could actually feel the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And that one person said, I'm going to send you a treatment and I'm going to use a cushion, and I'm going to actually do all the positions with the hands on the cushion as if it was your body. And so I'm going to do the top of the cushion, the side of the cushion, the back of the cushion for the head. And I was lying on my bed and I actually could feel the energy move from my head to the top of my body. And I just thought that was absolutely, totally and utterly staggering.
That is staggering. I don't know if I've felt that.
I really did feel it. And
that's wonderful.
And then with my second degree, again, it was a very positive experience, but it was a bit like my ordination. I really did feel that something from on high was given to me, and something opened up. And I suppose I was very happy to be able to send it, because as a priest, I've sent a lot of prayer to people and sat and held people in illness and disturbance and mental illness or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a kind of correlation, but it was a kind of physical, spiritual connection that I
liked. Right.
And lo and behold, we finished the second degree weekend. Monday was my day off, and when I came into hospital on the Tuesday, I was on call, and I was called in straight away to a circumstance where a member's staff had been told that he had lung cancer. And this guy was a really, really gruff old head gardener, rough and tough, big marshmallowy guy inside. And his wife said, Gordon, you're the only person he wants to talk to. And she told me the news. I was obviously quite shocked to hear this colleague stroke friend had had this prognosis. And I sat and listened to him, and he cried, and he wasn't the type of guy who cried. And I held his hand. He wasn't a man who wanted religion, and that was cool. And suddenly I had a really strong intuition.
Oh, Gordon, just hold that thought. I have to interrupt you. I'm sorry. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, and we'll be back with the continuing story of the head gardener.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Reiki practitioners everywhere prefer Astrolite massage tables because of optimum portability, leg clearance, easy setup, comfort, and quality. For 15 years, Rampa Enterprises, previously Magic Flute, has been shipping tables around the world to the global Reiki community.
Why wait any longer to get yours? Contact us now through our website at www.portablemassagetables.com and we'll help you select just the right table to fit your needs. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
Experience higher love, an archangelic journey into ascended joy and authentic living.
Your hosts, Sri Ram Ka and Kira Ra, will assist you to open your heart, expand your love, and be ever present with true joy.
Your journey with Sri and Kira begins right here on the Seventh Wave Network with Higher Love, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Create a life with growth, balance, abundant peace of mind, and joy. Tune in and call into Spirits Evolving with pragmatic psychic and certified hypnotherapist Lee Channing. By using the simple tools for growth offered by Lee, including intuition, color awareness, creative visualization, and more, build a stronger understanding of your own energy and offer clear, unencumbered energy to those with whom you share your life, whether for an individual or a business, home environment, or your office. Lee evaluates and interacts with the energy at hand, providing an analysis of the problem and a description of the options available to move forward successfully and with grace. Spirits Evolving with Lee Channing broadcasts each Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spirits Evolving, your guide toward a life filled with more balance, intention, and contentment.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. And today I have Gordon Melvin from the UK, from England, in a town north of London. And he was right in the middle of telling us a story about an acquaintance of his who worked in the hospital.
As a member of staff, who was a colleague, friend in the hospital, who was the head gardener of a huge hospital.
Right, yeah. And he had just found out that he had cancer?
Lung cancer.
So, please, go on with your story.
Okay, well, this was the 2 days after my second degree. On duty, first bleep of the morning, the pager goes, called to an emergency, shocked to see it was a member of staff. His wife told me he's just had the prognosis. And you're the only person he wants to speak to next to me. So I ended up holding his hand. He started to cry. And I listened to everything. I knew he didn't want religion, so I just sat there with my inner attention and my compassion as I could muster it. And suddenly I had this intuition. Oh my goodness. I've just been given this gift. Maybe I should tell him about this gift and offer if he would like to have a treatment. You know, it was a bit keen maybe, but I told him about it, not knowing what on earth he'd say and how I'd respond. And he just lit up. He said, please, 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 but I don't want on hands. I want you to send it to me. And he was so clear. And I was really amazed by that because he listened to what I said and he wanted it sent. And this is a truly amazing story. I then started in my generosity to send a treatment at 7 o'clock every night. I did this for 4 or 5 months. And I arranged for a rota of people to take over when I couldn't be there. And he and his wife, it became the focal point of their life. They sat down as if they were listening to the radio at 7 o'clock. They had a neurotic cat and a highly strung dog, and all the animals would come and sit with them, and the dog and the cat would go absolutely to sleep and be at peace. And they would sit there, and as he once said, I would just bathe myself in Reiki. And he said, I believe in this. And he was just completely and utterly amazed by it. And a few months later, we continued for 7 months, but I got a rota of people because I couldn't manage it myself. And one day I was called in to see one of the oncologists at the hospital, whom I knew fairly well. And I thought, I'm going to get in trouble, I think, because he said, I want to talk to you about Paul. And I thought, And he said, I didn't know you did Reiki. And I said, you know about Reiki? He said, oh, I know about Reiki. He said, I didn't know you did it. And I said, well, I don't exactly tell everybody in the hospital. And he said, well, he shouldn't be alive. And as far as I'm concerned, you just keep on doing what you're doing. Okay? I know about Reiki, and it's just fine with me. So that was actually a huge affirmation for me as well. I couldn't use Reiki with the patients. I could have got myself into serious trouble. But interestingly, a few patients that knew, people that knew me and knew that I did Reiki, actually asked for the chaplain that did Reiki. So occasionally I could do Reiki. If a patient asked for it, it was okay for me to do it. I discussed it with my boss because it was something I could do. But I certainly couldn't offer it on the NHS.
So what? Wait. So what happened to Paul?
Well, Paul continued to surprise everybody because I didn't have a very good prognosis. He's still alive. It's been quite a few years. And he and his wife did first degree. And they were absolutely and totally gobsmacked by it. They just changed their life. And people in her department, she too works in the same hospital, and people in her department said, "You're different. You're so much more peaceful. You're so much more able to deal with stressful things. You're so much better with difficult people in this team."
Wow.
And she actually treats him on the way to work in the car. She just puts her hands on his neck and his body and treats him as they drive to work.
Uh-huh.
And it's changed their life. They have been to one or two of our local little gatherings that we have with other Reiki people, but they haven't gone any further than that. But they keep it very private to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a turning point in their lives, and they are completely at peace with this gift in their life.
Well, I can imagine, and very grateful to have life.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. What a wonderful story. So I want to go back a little bit because people might wonder what you're speaking about when you talk about your being a priest. So there are several different churches that have priests. So I'm just wondering, can you give me a little background of your...
Yes, certainly.
...of your priestdom?
Yeah. My priesthood... Obviously, priesthood is universal, but it also, in particular, I'm a priest within the Church of England.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And in days gone by, I don't know how it is now, but there was a ruling that every hospital had to have a chaplain because the work of a chaplain seemed to be fairly normal since our hospitals were sacred places run by nurses and nuns and by nuns and holy religious people in their first days, and they were places of hospitality. So it was a thing that the Church of England provided chaplains for hospitals.
Uh-huh. And did you go into your training specifically to be a chaplain?
No, I didn't. I became a priest because I had a sense of vocation from age 5, which I kept under wraps until I was age 26. Didn't tell a living soul.
I see. And then you went into, what do you call it?
Theological college.
Uh-huh.
I had to be selected for ordination, went to see the bishop, did all that, and eventually trained and was ordained. But I always knew that I wouldn't remain in parish ministry, and I always knew that I'd kind of do something different after that and kind of go and do something weird and wonderful after that.
Uh-huh. So now you're a little bit... You don't have your job as a hospital chaplain anymore.
No.
And would you say you're in a bridging time, or?
I think I'm beyond the bridge now. I've been testing the waters. I left at the end of 2004, and I had 10 very happy years in that particular hospital, and I had 13 and a half years without work. And I really loved it. And I worked with thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
Uh-huh.
And probably spent time with thousands and thousands of people that were dying, and working with people that were traveling through the valley of the shadow of death, if you like.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I also worked in a mental health hospital, a psychiatric hospital, which was really interesting in relation to acute work.
Mm-hmm.
But I left because I wanted to follow the next course of my ministry, which for me was a liberation from representing religion. I'd been to see a bishop, and he said, "Well, the trouble with you is you're full of it. You're not having a crisis of faith. You haven't misbehaved. But there's no place for you because you don't fit into our boxes. So you're, instead of rebelling somewhere, and you're not a radical, you're just reinventing yourself in a place just to the side of all this."
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I've been doing. And I've been concentrating on three things. One, my Reiki practice. So I have a small practice which I have in my home,
mm-hmm.
people that come for treatments. And my passion is something called the Enneagram, which is an ancient typology of human nature based on 9 different types of people, 9 different worldviews, 9 different lenses. It's actually something that's said to be as old as 5,000 years before Christ. It's gone through many forms and guises. Enneagram means Greek model for 9. And it's actually a diagram that contains universal laws of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
I run workshops and work with that. And I also work as a coach or life coach. Very much continuing my ministry of dealing with people's core issues in life, whatever they may be.
So a life coach, is that different from a psychological therapist?
It's part of that, but coaching, unlike counseling, is not about going backwards. And there's no giving of advice. I sit with a person who's reasonably well and wants to take their life from one place to the other.
I see.
And what I do is I listen for my life, and then I trust there will be a pause, and I will have the right sort of open-ended question which will engage them in their inner resources. And they are doing the work. I ask the penetrating question.
Mm-hmm.
And they go inside and find the things they need.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes all I do is I look at them and I say to them, what else? And they say something. I say, what else? And they're quite taken aback. And they go inside and they reach another level. And they pull something out. And because they're making their own decisions,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not telling them, apparently there's about a 9 out of 10 chance that they'll actually stick to the things that they've decided they want to do. Then I ask them how they're going to do it, what resources, what resistance they will have, and then they agree to a time scale. So it's very practical.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be anything from clearing your kitchen cupboard to getting rid of your job to divorcing your partner to moving to Australia to taking up a meditation practice, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And again, 9 times out of 10, the people, not knowing particularly that I am a priest, because I don't advertise it at this point, I just let it be, eventually come into some sort of area where they want to talk about their interior life. And what they're doing, what they want to do, what they've got inside, core values, spirituality, if you like, which I find amazing.
Well, this is going to be the next topic. But before we get to that, we need to take a station break. So this is Phyllis Furumoto with Gordon Melvin of the UK, and we'll be back with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network. Are you tired of carrying a heavy wooden massage table around? Is your back sore? Or do you have imprints of cables and braces on your kneecaps after sitting and giving a Reiki treatment? Try a lightweight Astrolite massage table for maximum comfort. Contact us, Paul or Upasana, at www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
For Spirit of Film Conversations, this is Randall Barrow. Hello, Seventh Wave listeners. I hope you'll join me each week as I explore how movies are changing the way we think, live, and dream. Spirit of Film Conversations showcases today's independent and visionary filmmakers and their personal and artistic journey to bring their vision to the big screen, television, DVD, or streaming video on the internet. Spirit of Film Conversations is also for people who make movies, whether the established film professional or the aspiring filmmaker. My show also celebrates the motion picture's unique ability to affect us emotionally, intellectually, even spiritually. So if you want to hear the real behind-the-scenes story of the most amazing and visionary films being made today and find out how you can use movies to empower you in your everyday life, join me each week on Spirit of Film Conversations, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Also, check out my website at spiritoffilm.net to find out more about the movies I talk about each week. And thanks for listening to Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change.
Discover how to create the reality you desire, manifest your destiny, and find your authentic self. Meet your angels, teachers, and guides along the way. Explore how karma is created, how contracts can be cleared, and how to heal past life and ancestral pain to clearing your path toward ascension in this lifetime. Learn how to make this experience joyful and not frightening. Jean Adrian's book, Soul Adventures, is available for purchase on her website at Amazon.com and in your local bookstore. She also created a card deck, the Inner Speak Cards, which enables fast and simple karmic clearing sessions. They are available for purchase on her website at www.innerspeak.com. That's www.innerspeak.com.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today I have with me Gordon Melvin, who's from England, and he is a priest of the Church of England, but he doesn't say that anymore, and a life coach, Enneagram
teacher.
Yeah. And Reiki practitioner. So, Gordon, I'm really interested in talking to you a little bit about spirituality, which is where you ended up in our last segment. For you, what is spirituality?
Oh, you would ask me that.
It's an obvious question.
Yeah, I might ask you what you think it is.
Okay.
I'm actually, one of the jobs I've got to do after I get home from a few weeks of travel is produce an article stroke workshop on spirituality, and I've said this is going to be really, really practical. No mention of flying saucers and dreamy thoughts and sunsets and stuff. It's going to be practical stuff that you can do. Because whatever spirituality is, I reckon it's an absolutely innate part of our being. It's as much a part of us as our physicality, our sexuality, our emotionality, our intellect. And at a guess, I would say spirituality is a part of us that deals with the unknown. And in a way, I look at it, the meeting of the horizontal and the vertical, and I'll explain that. We have a life. We are born, we are little babies, we go to school, we become difficult teenagers, we become young men and women, we get married, we have jobs, we come to midlife and we retire and all this sort of thing. That's our narrative life. Gordon Melvin. Gordon Melvin is now 52. Lucky him. Right. But at every moment in that little sort of A to B horizontal life, there are moments available that come down from another space. We're able to receive these moments, but we're not as open to them as we might be. And these moments, you can say they come down from on high or whatever, they're in interior moments or intuitive moments, whatever you might want to call them, spiritual moments, religious moments. And the receptivity of those moments is part of our growing in spirituality. And the way that I look at it is that we have to be reasonably together to start this journey, in as much that we need to be able to provide ourselves with the basics of life. We need to be fairly content, to be able to earn some money, to be able to live with some degree of integrity, and be both satisfied and healthily dissatisfied with our lives, that we begin to search for something different.
Mm-hmm.
And these moments open into our lives and begin to show us that there really is something there. And it may be, in a practical arena, being reconciled to somebody you find difficult. And there's a wonderful release of energy, and you begin to think, this is really powerful stuff, to be able to forgive somebody and move on. It may be reaching that point in yourself where you want to actually be the creative person you are, and you discover that you're a poet inside, or a musician, or a mathematician. It's going to those segments of your life and beginning to look at things from an interior perspective. What's going on? Where am I in this? What do I want to do? And it's moving from a place to me of being defensive and reactive and contracting when you're with other people, to a place of being expansive and opening and trusting and being non-judgmental with people.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Enneagram, we look at this as the difference between our personality type and the essence we're born with. Babies are receptive. They are just pure essence, and they are receptive to reality. They look at it with wonderment. But gradually we develop this protective device which closes us down to some extent, and we become we contract. Oh, I'm angry with you, I'm cross with you, I don't like you, I have an opinion, I'm not showing you me anymore. And it's spirituality is the healing and opening of these parts of ourselves that have perhaps shut down to some extent. And there's nothing wrong with them having shut down. It's part of this strange journey where we have to kind of find out where we're wounded to begin to work with the wound.
So, I'm not saying this to be argumentative, but that sounds more like what I would call spiritual path.
Right.
Rather than spirituality.
Okay.
Or maybe we could simplify it even further and say, so when you were working, or when you took your education as a priest, did you speak about spirit in the sense of human spirit?
Yes, it's talked about. It certainly is a part of the education.
Uh-huh. So I just wanted to check that, because it's good not to make assumptions about this. And for me, a human spirit is... you didn't ask me what I thought, but I'll give it to you anyway. In my work with Reiki, what I've come to realize is that there is a part of myself that is innate, but not necessarily always connected.
Yes.
And what Reiki has done for me as a practice has, it's given me a vehicle to connect my physical self, and I include in my physical self my emotions and my mentality and my intellect and so on,
yes,
with this elusive thing that we call spirit.
Yes.
Which for me is very interesting, because there are some languages, of course, as you know, where spirit, thought, and mind are the same word.
Yes.
And then there's another language, Japanese, in which mind and heart are the same word.
Yeah.
And spirit is something else. So it's a very interesting process just to look at languages. For me, in the English language and in my own American language, my idea of spirit really came from my Christian background, which maybe was not very supportive universally, but when I used to talk about spirit, I had this idea about angels. That's sort of where my spirit part went. And now, when I speak of my own spirit, it's a very interesting thing, because it's what makes me unique as a person, as a human being, but it also is what makes me connected,
yes,
to every person. So it's a very odd, kind of paradoxical state, if I may use that word. Would you agree with that, or
I completely resonate with it.
resonate, that's a very good word, rather than agree.
I believe there's something indwelling in each and every person if you want to make a picture, it could be like a seed that needs to be tended and watered and cared for and nurtured.
Mm-hmm.
And it is beyond measure and belief in value. And this is the thing that we quite often overlook in our lives, in our A to B process.
Mm-hmm.
And religion is kind of man's struggle with things that he's understood through history. His attempt to codify or to identify things that have mm-hmm. been left by prophetic people and mm-hmm. traditions. But it quite often is very reactive and defensive. And the spirit is so receptive. It's this openness. And I think in a way, for me, Reiki touches the spirit directly and opens it up and enlivens it. And for me, Reiki is as a part of my daily practice. I treat myself before I get up. And I have an image of myself going to a kind of Reiki stroke spiritual petrol station where I'm having this huge infill of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Which often leads me to a feeling of well-being and compassion
mm-hmm.
or insight. And not always easy insights, because Reiki holds a mirror as well, and sometimes I see things that I haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a feeling of being filled with something.
Mm-hmm.
And I take that as a preparation for whatever I find downstairs, out the front door, telephone, people, work. And I have come to notice that on those days where I can't treat myself for whatever reasons, it's not quite the same.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that your practice of Reiki, well, see, this is the word that is always difficult. Supplements, supports, adds to your practice, your religious practice?
My religious practice, that is a difficult one, religion. I'm not so keen on my religion. I don't really think I have a religious practice. I've kind of done that without sounding dismissive. It's a part of my being, but I don't have a religious practice.
Mm-hmm.
And Reiki, the question you asked me really, really interests me, and I don't know whether I have the equipment to be able to answer it in the way I want to, but as of today, and I've had some interesting experiences to do with Reiki in the last couple of days, Reiki both augments and complements and adds to my spiritual practice. But there is also a sense in which, if this is universal energy and I experience it as unconditional love and unconditional healing, and then in a sense I'm talking about the stuff of God,
mm-hmm.
if I want to call it God. The divine, the universe, whatever. And so when I'm saying something I've never said before today, and I'm finding it quite moving, but I'm actually feeling that Reiki... I had a feeling today when I was working with some people that Reiki actually is the stuff... It's the stuff of the stuff of the stuff of the universe.
Mm.
And my work with it bypasses a lot of the additional things that man puts upon these things, and it gives me a direct link with this source of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I really, really, really like it is that it's for everybody, and it's inside me, and it's for me, and it's absolutely attuned to what I need now. And as I trust it, it deepens its habitation within me, or my receptivity to its indwelling presence.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Gordon. I'm sorry to kind of cut you off, but we need to stop for a station break. So listeners, just take this next couple of minutes to go within yourself, be with Gordon's words, and we'll be right back. This is Phyllis Muramoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Reiki treatments can be done almost anywhere. On the floor, on a bed, or even on the dining room table. But I certainly prefer giving and receiving treatments on my comfortable, lightweight Astrolite massage table. Contact us for more information at www.astrolite.com. www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolight, the table of a lifetime.
Being here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss being here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
The Unity Radio Hour, more than a radio show. The Unity Radio Hour is leading-edge spirituality, which will help you discover new ways to enhance your life, your relationships, your career, and more. Plan to spend every Wednesday afternoon with your host, Mindy Ogland, for the Unity Radio Hour, broadcasting live on the Seventh Wave Network at 12 p.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Central.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. And I don't know about your listeners, but I think we're deep into essence right now with Gordon Melvin from England. And Gordon, I really appreciated what you shared just a few minutes ago, and I hated to cut you off, but thank you. That really touched me. And one of the things that I am so moved in my own practice and in speaking with others is that there are these moments, whether they occur, for some people they occur during the initiations, for other people it occurs years after, after many, many years of practice, many self-treatments, many treatments of others. I'm talking about myself now. And 15 years later, there's some experience that I have that I understand that this sort of cliche, perhaps, of the new age or cliche of the baby boomer era, where life is much more than we know, and we as human beings only use a very small part of our potential, those kinds of thoughts, I really get it. Because I see that there's just a whole, if I may use the word not lightly, universe of possibilities that I have not experienced, but I know exists because of this practice. And I'm deeply moved by it, and it draws me in further and further into this place. And in one of the first interviews I did with Volker Brink, he had this wonderful image of our spiritual path as being like a river that we have in our lives, and that mankind often builds institutions and sort of like little houses and settlements along the river called the Catholic Church, the Church of England, Judaism, and so on, and that as human beings we visit these institutions. But Reiki doesn't have this institution yet, and he said, I really hope that it never does. And I'm wondering if that sounds, that you would resonate with that. We'll use your word.
It really does resonate with me, because one of the things I've learned about in religion is that religion often deals with the defensive and reactive parts of us rather than the receptive. And that's a great shame and a great pity. It doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. But quite often people want security and they want a group of like-minded people, and they're looking for a kind of overallness. Mm-hmm. And we need that. But we're also dealing with things that are just so beyond that, and things that are embracing and life-enhancing and open and free and expressive. I belong to an organization called the Reiki Association, and it's a non-accrediting body because there's no accrediting body for Reiki. And it's wonderful because it does have some of the things to do with the church, and as much as there's people, and there's people making decisions, and there's people working with their levels of understanding and that sort of thing. But the great thing about it is it's people trying to work with Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And so we share our stories, we share our experiences, we share our tears, we share our humor, and we share treatments.
And would you say that this is an important piece of Reiki practice as community, as you describe it?
I couldn't emphasize enough how important it is. Being with other people that share this gift enhances the gift. They also challenge you.
Uh-huh.
They also push your buttons, and you call upon Reiki. And Reiki, as you know only too well, there are principles, and these principles are enormous guides for us, guidelines for us. So working with other people in Reiki is a way to deepen Reiki practice.
Uh-huh.
It's also very joyful.
Well, it's an amazing, amplification of some of my experiences when I experience them with other people. So, for instance, when I treat myself, that's one experience. When I treat someone else, that's another experience. When I treat someone else in the company of 20 other people treating someone else, that's a whole other experience. And in my wonderful possibility of traveling, I have had the opportunity to be in a room with 500 or 600 people treating each other with Reiki, and that's another amplification. So for me, I feel that one of the aspects of this practice that we, and I will use this very, very generally, we as a global community are just coming into the understanding about how important it is to recognize that, if I may use a cliche, no man or woman is an island.
Yeah.
And that in that acknowledgement, we can acknowledge community as a part of our spiritual practice. Would you agree with this?
It's just so true to me. I mean, I just couldn't say how important that is.
Uh-huh. And that's become very important for you, obviously.
It has, because I belong to this organization, but I'm also on a council member, which means in business language a company director for a term or two. And that in itself, running a small organization of Reiki practitioners and Reiki people with Reiki events, has been a real insight into this life and a deepening of practice.
Uh-huh.
So that's,
and would you say that it becomes a part of your Reiki practice?
The actual role.
In the actual role, yeah.
Yes, it does, but the role's a temporary role, and I won't always be doing that.
Right, you know, but that's like, you in this moment.
Yeah, it's very much a part of my practice, and working with the people with Reiki integrity and Reiki, the Reiki principles as I can understand them, and sharing treatments, and sending Reiki to friends that are, colleagues that are in need at times, we look after each other. There's a lot of compassion that goes on. A few sparks, but that can be fun. But there's a lot of compassion.
Mm-hmm. And how would you define compassion?
You ask difficult questions. It's something that I don't really understand, but it's something really high, and it's different than just kindness. It's really, really big. It's almost like it's the face of God in our presence. It's the face of total accommodation and spaciousness and acceptance and honoring and upholding and loving. It's unconditional. It's not a giving to get in any way or form.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Well, Gordon, we're at the end of our interview, if you can believe it. Time has, again, just flown by. It always does in these interviews. thank you so much for coming and being a part of this program. And I know that for the listeners, you've sparked a lot of thought processes and feeling processes. So good luck with your journey and with your new life, as it were. And I know that I'll be seeing you again also. And listeners, perhaps we'll have Gordon back again to talk about other parts of his life that were really interesting, but I never had a chance to ask him about it. So this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the 7th Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.